Welcome to our new segment, The Front Porch, where we bring people together with diverse views and backgrounds to see where we can find common ground. I'm Scott Finn, and on the front porch with me today are Lori Lynn, columnist for the Charleston Daily Mail, and Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Thanks for being part of this discussion.
Thank you.
So, hard times have come yet again to the coal fields of West Virginia. Massive layoffs, big cuts in production. Coal severance tax is down by about half in places like Boone and Mingo County. Rick, what do you say to that?
Well, I'm not one to downplay the hardships in southern West Virginia. I'm from southern West Virginia. My grandfather was a miner. My first big fight was supporting miners during the Pittston coal strike. I tried to show up and stand up whenever there's a fight for retirees, for pension benefits, for promised health care.
You got coal bona fide, so I give you that.
And it is. There's no doubt. I mean, a huge part of our tax base, you know, comes from severance taxes, of which coal is a big part, and coal pays a lot of property taxes to local schools. I don't think there's any way to deny that these are hard times. In my view, and Lori may think differently, I think the problems with coal are kind of overdetermined. I think there's a glut on the global market. The prices have dropped by about a third over the last few years. The kinds of mining that we're doing are less employment intensive. There's cheaper coal out west. And again, when you base your whole economy on something you take out of the ground, every time you take something out, there's less in there. It doesn't replenish as you go. There's competition with cheap natural gas. So I see it as the problems. A lot of them are market driven. I don't deny that, you know, the regulatory thing could have a part. I mean, I don't deny at all the hardships in the coal field.
Well, I think when you look at the problems that coal is having, Rick is totally right. A lot of it is the market, but when you look at what's happening with coal in the market, I think you have to separate out what is kind of a true market issue versus what we're essentially doing to ourselves or the government is doing to us. A lot of the drop in demand is because there's great uncertainty on the part of power companies and power plants about whether they're going to be able to use coal in the future. That's what the court case right now is about. The regulations that the Obama EPA has proposed would make it very difficult for coal-fired power plants to even operate. So when we're telling power plants you're not going to be able to use coal for environmental reasons, it's pretty understandable that the market for coal is going to go down. And we've seen that. We've seen the severance tax go down, which is based on the sales price of coal, and the price of a ton of coal has dropped. But I think you have to separate out what's a true market. You know, has it dropped because there are really good alternatives? It's not obvious at all that that's what's happening.
Really? I mean, there's a boom in natural gas production.
Well, sure. Other fossil fuels as a replacement for coal. But yeah, this alternative energy economy that we keep hearing about with wind and biofuels.
Solar.
That really has not materialized. And if you even look at projections out into the future, the projections don't even look that great. So, you know, we're going to have to power the world and the U.S. somehow. And, you know, it's not clear at all that we're going to be able to do that without fossil fuels, including coal.
Lori, so is it fair, if I may summarize, is it fair for me to say you think that the investment of time and energy that our state and federal leaders are putting into this fight against these regulations is a good fight, a fight that should be made?
Sure. I'm not someone who really subscribes to the war on coal rhetoric that much. I don't think that it's particularly helpful to describe it as a war, but certainly pushing back on regulations that are really going to kill an industry that's an important industry, that is the most important industry in our state, I think that's a worthwhile thing for our state leaders to do. I certainly don't think that they shouldn't be doing it.
I've seen projections for the future of coal, and I think they do see it, you know, eventually reaching a plateau. I think coal is going to be a part of the economy, whether metallurgical or the fraction that's steam and metallurgical, for a good while to come. But if we could talk about jobs a little bit, coal employment peaked around in the late 1940s at over 125,000. It dropped by more than half by the end of that decade. By 20 years after the peak, coal, it dropped by two-thirds. Coal jobs dropped by one half during the 1980s. You know, I mean, this is not a new trend. I think it's really dishonest to think that if you get rid of the EPA and Obama magically, then we'll go back to having 125,000 people work in the mines.
I don't know if anyone would argue that. I guess part of this is just rooted in a feeling of these are good paying jobs for people that don't necessarily have to have a college degree. Yeah. And that, where does that exist anymore? And so I guess the question would be, okay, well, let's say these jobs are just gone. We just write them off. Then what?
Well, you know, if you want to go back 30 years, we've gone from Weirton Steel being the largest employer in the state to Walmart. I mean, it's part of a whole global economic trend we've seen with deindustrialization, mechanization. And again, anytime you have an economy based on extraction, there's fragility, there's boom and bust. And if you look almost worldwide, extractive economies everywhere have really serious problems, including political problems. So
it would be better if we didn't have one, right, based on extractive economies. I mean, would we be better off if we just didn't have coal, and maybe if we let it die or at least fade away, maybe we'll be better off. Maybe we'll be forced to become something else.
Would the state be better off? Would the world be better off? Would the country be better off? I mean, I think you have, if you're talking about the world, I don't think you can say that the world would be better off without extractive fuel. That if you look at our
How about this counterfactual? Let me try this just for a second. What would West Virginia have been like if without coal? Let's say the coal existed in Wyoming, where a lot of it is now anyway, right? What would we be? Rick has thought about this a little.
Okay. My wife's from Vermont, you know, which is a mountainous rural state. And one thing that's really, you know, Vermont is not based on extraction. When you go there, you know, Vermont's largely owned by Vermonters. When I go there, I feel like I'm visiting the Shire and the Lord of the Rings, where the hobbits live, whereas West Virginia is kind of on the edges of the Dark Lord's kingdom, so it would make a real difference, I think. But that's counterfactual. I mean, here's my counterfactual. I wish we had 125,000 working miners, all of whom were members of the United Mine Workers of America, mining coal in a way that had no adverse impacts on the landscape or the people or the climate. That's my counterfactual, but the universe isn't particularly interested. But I think there are some real policy alternatives.
Let's say there is some common ground here in that neither one of us finds the terminology of a war on coal necessarily helpful. There might be some disagreement about strategy and how much time and energy we put into fighting EPA regulations or not. But then the question becomes, what's next, right? There's this whole project out there called What's Next West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I'll start with you, Lori. I mean, what do you think we should be focusing on next?
I think that's really the key question, not necessarily all over the state. If you look at the northern part of the state, there's the shale boom, and there are other things going on with energy there. And, you know, you could debate the pros and cons of that, certainly. But if you look at the southern part of the state, I was reading Homer Hickman's book the other day, The Rocket Boys. One of the points that he makes in the very first chapter, I think, is he talks about McDowell County and how no one lived down there. Even Native Americans didn't live down there in the really rugged part of the state. The topography is just so, so difficult. There was nothing going on there, really, except, you know, trees and animals and nature. Then we went in and had the coal mines, and so people moved there. Now the coal has gone. You still have these communities that are left over, and they're very limited in what they can actually do down there. You have the ATV trails, which apparently there are a lot of Americans who like to go out and ride around on ATVs in this really rugged landscape. So that sounds like a possibility. I don't know how many people you're going to employ from that. You know, we talk about tourism a lot. That's certainly a possibility. But one question that I think it's fair to ask is, you know, should we have a whole bunch of people living in these communities where it's really hard to find jobs and, you know, businesses that actually will work, just given the difficulties of, you know, moving in and out of these mountains?
It's a long-term issue here. People have talked about a lot. The mining industry brought people here and it goes away, but the people remain. They have homes and families that make it hard to leave.
And that's a West Virginia thing too. And that's a good West Virginia value, that we want to stay close to our families. We want to stay in state. We don't want to go off and do something else. But then in some cases, you have to ask, does it limit people?
What do you think, Rick?
Oh, I'm full of thoughts right now. If you're looking for an area of disagreement, there might be one. I think climate change is real, and I think it's a real threat, although I don't think West Virginia coal was totally to blame for it. That's one point. But
well, and to be fair, I don't know if Lori is saying climate change isn't real.
No, No, I don't think we've even gotten to that yet. But
I mean, that's something I'll just put
maybe,
out
sure.
there.
Sure. Maybe Certainly. Maybe there's more, there's about levels of priorities. Like, well, is it a high priority or a medium-ish priority? Is that fair?
And what do we mean when we say climate change is real? Is it catastrophic climate change? Are humans responsible for all of it, for just a little bit?
So differences there, yes.
Yeah, but sure. Anyway, if we could go back, I think it's the way we look at the story is really important. I think in America, we tend to think about things as an action movie where there's good guys on one side and bad guys on the other, and if you get rid of the good guys, it'll all be good. And that's not the case here.
And wait, stop back.
If you get rid of the bad guys, everything will be good. So I probably inverted that. It might be my dark side coming out. But now what I'm thinking is, like, I really think if the EPA would go away and there was not a black person to blame for all this, there would still be serious troubles for unemployment in the coal fields of West Virginia. And I think the same is also true. If coal mining would stop, there would also be real problems with tax base and jobs. It's more like a tragedy than an action movie. It's like, it really reminds me of a Greek tragedy, and we just need to kind of work our way out of it. And I think there are concrete policies that could do that.
Such as?
One, at the federal level, I'm going to give Congressman McKinley credit. He introduced legislation, bipartisan legislation last year, that would create some kind of relief for people who lose their jobs in mining, modeled on the Trade Adjustment Act, the people who lose their jobs due to trade agreements. And I think there are multiple examples of where the federal government has set up policies or to help out specific injury areas, whether we're going through like base closings or other kind of major transitions. I think the people and the region of Appalachia have contributed so much to this country by building its industrial might, our standard of living, helping it win its wars, that when we're in a time of this, I admire McKinley for coming out with that. I would challenge our federal politicians to put up or shut up.
Yeah, did that actually pass? Anything
it
happened?
Has not actually yeah. passed. And I would say, you know, all right, guys, you can cry all these crocodile tears about coal miners while you're not passing meaningful federal mine safety legislation and everything else, or you could actually do something. That's one thing that could be done at the federal level. There's also state stuff and also grassroots stuff.
Lori, what do you think? Is the government the solution here? Should they step in with more money and more training, and that will help all these unemployed miners to be able to find new things? That's not a very conservative point of view, usually.
No, and it's not like we haven't tried to help with, the idea of retraining people is not really a new one. I think the problem is something that you alluded to earlier, Scott, which is that coal mining pays very, very well, and it doesn't require a lot of education. I think the average salary now is $72,000 a year. So it's hard to find, it's hard to train people who have lost their jobs in coal mining into a job that's going to pay that much money.
And those coal mining jobs, there's a cascading effect. One $72,000 a year job in Lincoln County or Logan County supports all these other sure. people and businesses and family members. And when you substitute that with a $25,000 a year job,
sure.
right?
I mean, so you have people down there who are waiting for the coal to come back. And, you know, on the one hand, you could say that's futile, but it's also very understandable when you, in your very recent memory, either you or people you know were working in the mines and making quite good money. And, you know, in some of these families, coal mining goes back several generations. So it's you know, I don't think training is a bad idea. I don't think we shouldn't pursue it, but I think you just have to recognize that there are going to be limitations to how much you can do with that.
I'd agree with that. I mean, I think it's a part of the puzzle. We also need investments in education and infrastructure, you know, early childhood things. There are some interesting grassroots efforts that are going on right now. You alluded to one, What's Next West Virginia, where mm-hmm. like, I don't think people screaming at each other about coal is the most productive way to get through this. We really need to talk and listen to each other and try to figure out a way to get through this difficult period. There's Create West Virginia, where they're looking at entrepreneurial solutions and also recognizing that you want West Virginia to be the kind of place people actually want to live, where we don't totally trash everything. There's Our Children, Our Future, which is dealing with child poverty issues and is one multiple victories, bipartisan victories with a Democratic legislature and a Republican legislature. There's Try This, which is trying to get people to promote healthy lifestyles and local foods and physical activity. I mean, I think people are really trying to work through this. I think we should be as gentle as we can with each other while we do it.
Is there anything else?
I have a question.
Yes, go.
Rick, I want to ask you, what do you think about what the Democratic Party has done as far as Appalachia? I mean, one question that I often ask myself is, how would we be different? How would things be different right now if West Virginia, and this is wildly hypothetical, but say we had 55 electoral votes like California does, or even 29 like New York does, do you think it would be as politically easy for Obama to have the stance that he's had toward coal? You know, in reality, we have 5 votes. The state of Wyoming only has 3. So there's very little political price for the Democrats to pay for, you know, I mean, I'm going to say attacking coal, and you may see it differently.
Let me add, I think they've answered the question that coal is dying in West Virginia and the Democratic Party is too, and they've written us off. Is that not fair?
Right. The real loser has been the state party.
And that they really haven't made a serious effort. There has been, I'm going to stick to my guns. They really haven't made a serious concerted effort to respond to the tragedy that's unfolding that you described.
You know, one thing I'll say, it's like just recently in the last year, it looks like the Obama administration has remembered there's hardship here and has started talking about helping out. Like, would have been nice, guys, if you would have thought about that a while back. I'm totally there, but...
They have started, though, haven't they? There wasn't a proposal by the Obama administration to deal with the transition.
And it'll have to make it through the budget. Like, you know, there are programs that could the abandoned, I always want to say landmines, but it's mine lands program, which was established, not the same as landmines, but I always want to say that, could do more to help with the transition. You know, there are existing programs.
So take unemployed coal miners and put them to work restoring the properties that were disturbed by mining, right?
And if you could even update the law, because the way the law is written, you can only, you know, undo the damage of properties that were damaged at a certain point, I believe, in the 1970s. So if we updated the law, and again, I mean, I don't think there's a real easy way through this. Politically, I see the West Virginia Democratic Party has pretty much been subservient and agreeable with coal with whatever they want done. I mean, it's kind of like the coal industry can do an all-hands-on-deck performance and people go through this coal kabuki, I call it, this ritualized things. I think they've been, for the most part here, pretty obedient.
Well, let me put out one more counterfactual. It's either a dream or a nightmare scenario. Jeb Bush wins the White House. Mitch McConnell is still Senate president, and the Republicans control the House as well. Large majorities, ability to actually pass legislation and make it stick. What happens next, and what effect does that have on West Virginia and the coal industry?
I think that's a fair question because, you know, it's fun for me to beat up on Obama, but he did not start the anti-coal. You know, the EPA was fairly anti-coal even under George W. Bush. It wasn't, you know, quite to this extent, but...
So is there another way of putting that? Maybe that there are these pressures outside of any administration that are leading to these changes at the EPA, the climate change debate? And
sure, absolutely. And that will not go away. I think, you know, the EPA, just by virtue of the fact that it's the Environmental Protection Agency, is going to be pushing anti-climate change almost under any conceivable Republican president. I think it would not be the same level that it is under Obama. I don't think it would be as hostile to coal and fossil fuels, but it's not going to go away unless, you know, somehow miraculously we realize that climate change is not happening, which I'm not saying that it isn't, but it, you know, if the planet were to start cooling, then maybe something would change. Although we were saying it was cooling back in the 1970s, and I think coal was a culprit in the cooling as well as the warming. So
we won't even go there. But so you're basically saying, you know, the Republicans in charge, it has a small effect on the coal industry in a positive direction.
Yeah, you wouldn't see this rule that they were challenging in court that basically makes it prohibitively expensive to build a new coal-fired power plant. I don't think you would see anything, you know, at that level. But the EPA is not going to suddenly become coal friendly.
What do you think, Rick? Republicans completely in charge of Washington. What next?
Well, it'll be interesting. Let's see what you got, guys. But the other thing I would say is, you know, I do believe, you know, there's a tendency ideologically to look at the market as kind of a god, as an all-knowing thing, self-regulating. Its ways are not our ways, nor its thoughts our thoughts. But it rules all, and if you interfere with it, it is a jealous god and things like that. And I really think it is the market more than anything else that is hitting West Virginia. And again, I think wave the wand, make them go away. I think we're still going to have all these problems that we're going to have to deal with sooner or later, including how we're going to treat each other, how we're going to deal with the damage that's done by coal, the after effects of being a mineral colony for over 100 years, face it, where resources have been taken away and we've been left with very little. You know, scream at each other all you want, we're still going to have to deal with the consequences.
Rick, I'm going to have to go and Google this now, so save me the trouble. Its ways are not our ways. What are you quoting there?
That's Isaiah.
Sounds like Star Wars.
It's Isaiah.
I'm so embarrassed, Mom. I hope you're not listening to this. I did go to Catholic school.
There's a vicious rumor Episcopalians don't read the Bible, but we do in case we're on Jeopardy. So just saying.
All right, Lori, next time you have to bring your Bible verse with you.
Okay, I'll come armed.
Rick Wilson is with the American Friends Service Committee. Lori Lynn is a columnist with the Charleston Daily Mail. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We want to hear your opinion about the future of coal and about this new segment of ours. Tell us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WVPublic, or on Twitter. I'm @RadioFinn, and we're @WVPublic News. See you next week.